Off the Ball, GAA.
I'm actually thinking I probably need to stay fit if I do want to come back and play for Portlaoise next year. So
wow, proper ringer.
Get me, please. Just like with Jalan, was
put
it?
Put myself in the shop window here.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite. A bite-sized serving of Ireland's breakfast sports show.
Back. It's 9:02 a.m. on Friday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast, and we're continuing our build-up to Ireland versus Australia tomorrow, 3:10 kickoff at the Aviva Stadium. Delighted to have some rugby royalty in studio, David Campese, Australian legend. Good morning. How are things?
Rugby royalty. That's the first I've ever been heard of. Royal. thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Yeah,
absolutely. I don't know whether to start or finish on 1981, but it's obviously a tough memory for us as Irish people to talk about that day in Lansdowne Road, but. We might as well get it out of the way and just rip the band-aid off.
Quickly, what year is it now?
Yeah, well, it's 2024 and we're still not over it. So,
I've got over it many years ago.
I can imagine. But see, we haven't got to the semi-final stage, so we're still not over it. But what were your memories of that tournament and that afternoon, I guess, in Lansdowne Road as well?
Yeah, look, it was my first time was here, it was 40 years ago in the Grand Slam, so I was pretty young. And obviously the World Cup we were in, I think was it Grafton Street or Clacton Street here? On the main street. We were here for 2 weeks.
Yeah, for 2 weeks.
And part of me, it was an amazing, you know, experience. You walk out of the hotel and there's all the fans every day. And it was a great experience. Obviously, I was in the first World Cup in 87 where, you know, the IRB nobody wanted a World Cup. It was only for Australia and New Zealand put it together. But now look where it is, you know. So you've got to start somewhere. I was disappointed at home. But obviously, I've always played my best rugby overseas. For some reason, people seem to appreciate, you know, when you're doing something different.
Mm.
In Australia, we just call it the tall poppy syndrome, where they build you up, and when you start to fail, they just knock you down. look, it was up and down, but it was a great tournament, and we were here to win the World Cup. And, you know, we spent 2 weeks here. It was absolutely amazing. The people were great, and, you know, we'd go to training. You didn't have to pay to come and watch us, or now they hide behind the fences. We just trained like anyone else, you know, anyone can come. So it was just the atmosphere, and I think we were very relaxed, and it was probably, I think, part to a lot of the Irish people as well, who just, you know, enjoyed some good rugby.
Yeah, the memories aren't as good from an Irish perspective, in fairness. Like that Irish team in particular, and maybe the Irish teams you'd have come up against before and after that, were there traits to an Irish team that you come up against? Were there some players that really stand out to you that you come up against in your career?
Well, I think if you even like in 1984, we played England on the Saturday. Then the Saturday after, we played Ireland. You know, but we were here for 8 weeks. Mm. And we played something like 18 games. Yeah. So from one test, then we played a midweek game, then a test, and it was a game where first time I played against Ireland, but they just didn't give up. Like we were pretty comfortable in front, but you've got to realize then you go, oh, okay, well if they score, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
So that was in 1984. But then even 1991, Ireland didn't look like scoring the whole game, if you actually watch the game. Then all of a sudden, bang, Hamilton just runs away and scores. Now the pressure's on. So, you know. But I think the thing that showed in our team that when the try was scored, Fleming was the Scottish guy, Fleming was the linesman. I actually saw him last week in Scotland.
Right.
And I went up to him and said, mate, how long ago? He said, 3 minutes. I said, okay, thanks. So went on the goalpost. Michael Liner was there. Nick Farr-Jones was injured. Neil Francis got rid of him. Dirty play areas. No, he's a good mate of mine anyway.
You're allowed to say it then. Yeah.
Fredo's a good guy. And what happened was, Michael Liner said, guys, let's get down there and just try and control the ball. We weren't going to go for a penalty. We had to score the try. Penalty would have just made it a draw. So we got the ball. We kicked it long. And in those days, the number 10 normally gets it and then kicks it down near halfway. Okay, but your number 9 got it and didn't kick it out. And then we got it again and pumped in the corner. And then your number 8, I can't remember who it was, he put it out like 22 metres away. So we're back on the attack. Because normally you start from halfway, it's a long way to attack. But when you're in the 22, and we called a move where I came back off the wing into the forwards, which wingers don't like running into forwards.
Mm.
And I got in there. I was about to get out of the mall, and then I felt that one of the Irish guys was trying to steal the ball, so I had to stay in. And if you're a back in the malls, you know, it's dark and scary. You might expect a punch in the mouth or something like that. But they sup a lot of energy out of you as well. So I was walking back to the wing. As I turned around, the ball's going out. And that's when you can see. If you saw me run, I had no gas. I couldn't run. And luckily, Michael Leiner, who's, you know, who's what number 10s did nowadays, was catch pass support. Mark Eller did that. And Michael Leiner just looped around. It probably wasn't the best pass in the world. And it bounced, and he scored in the corner. But the interesting was watching that game now, and I remember the time you watch, as we scored, all the Irish supporters are just going like this. Then all of a sudden they're just going, oh, F, we just lost. It's just silence. So it was like the emotion was, oh, so try, oh, no, this is what we lost.
Yeah.
In that split second, you know, it was just quite eerie when, you know, because they loved the rugby, but then they realised we've just beaten them in the quarterfinal of the World Cup.
What are your memories, Ronan, of playing against Australia? I think, based on our research, that you played them 9 times in all. One of the games was the 18-9 win in the November Test in 2002, where you scored all 18 points. So that one was a particularly good memory. But like, in terms of coming up against Australia, did you always know what to expect? What are your particular memories or any games that stand out for you?
That game stood out because it was, you know, I can say it now, when you're retired, but I had the ball on a string that day. You wouldn't put a dog outside, but it was the All Lands Down Road and the wind was coming in. But something you learned that, and every kid should learn, is that when you hit a bad period, what do you have? I had a spiral in the bag and I could put the ball more or less where I liked, and I had great control of the ball. So that was a day I kicked beautifully off the tee, but I kicked even better out of the hand. And I can remember it was similar. I in the sports ground, I'm great. Memory of mine was when we went to the sports ground, I think, with Munster. I didn't use a kicking tee because the wind was so bad. I basically did old school and just dig the heel into the ground and put the ball in the ground, and I called what it's called shunting. So you just basically run through the ball. And I kicked, I think, 6 out of 6 that day. That, for me, were probably the two highlights from a kicking point of view of my kicking career, was the when you wouldn't put a dog out in the sports ground, you wouldn't put a dog out in Lansdowne Road, but you were able to master conditions. It was like hitting 3 irons into the wind at St. Andrews or the Belfry or in the golfing parlance. But you got to remember, it's a very different, I suppose, Australia. Australia in my time or in my day, they were market leaders. They were, you know, one of the big eyes for me growing up was Farr Jones and Lina as 9 and 10. And they had, you know, then it was Larkham. So they were obviously unbelievably strong 10s that were world-class 10s. Obviously, I think they've been reinvigorated completely under Joe Schmidt. And they're a dangerous team arriving into Ireland tomorrow because of the fact what has happened. They went to Twickenham and they deservedly depowered England in a lot of facets of the game, which makes them different. Then they probably, which happens to all teams, didn't have maybe appropriate fear for the game in Edinburgh, and they were outplayed by the Scots, I felt. Now they'll be on the rebound tomorrow and they'll make them dangerous, and they've got guys like Suwali in midfield who are incredibly good rugby players, whether that's league or union. People can decipher that for themselves, but the guys can play. And up front with Larry Fisher coaching them, who coached us at Munster, technically they're very, very astute, and that'll be a difficult game for Ireland tomorrow.
We have David Campese in studio later this morning, live with us. And a few weeks ago he was on to warm up for this piece today. And I just asked him, you know, how do you think Joe Schmidt's getting on? And he was absolutely scathing of Schmidt. It's basically saying he doesn't know Australian rugby, shouldn't be in charge, it's not working out. And he's since changed his mind. It was after the Wales game, I think, following the England victory. And he said, no, it's actually going pretty well. Where do you think the truth lies with Joe Schmidt in Australia at the moment? Is it somewhere in the middle?
No, it's not. I think he's doing an excellent job. You know, like, let's strip this back, Colm, in terms of Joe Schmidt is an international world-class coach who's available to coach rugby. You know, what his nationality is shouldn't be an issue. There's an Englishman coach in Ireland who's doing a brilliant job. There's a New Zealander coach in Australia who's doing and they look uncomparable to what has gone on before Joe took over, you know. So for me, it's the nationality of where you are as a coach doesn't come into it. It's what you do on the paddock that matters, you know. And Australia, look, they look dangerous again. And a lot of that is done to Joe's learning. And no matter what age you are, you're continuously learning. Whether you're in your 40s, your 50s, or your 60s, you still want to try and get better. And I think that's what Joe Schmidt is doing. And any team he gets his hands on, they get better. So, like, these things of whatever, song bites from David Campese, where he's kind of going, well, he's not Australian, he doesn't know the DNA, but I think he understands rugby better than a lot of people. So for me, he's doing an incredibly impressive job, and I think he enjoys getting stuck into a project. And this looks like it. And for the Lions going to Australia next summer, from people having this kind of whitewash mentality, now I think we're in a more realistic sphere where, yes, the Lions would be favoured to win that, but as opposed to it being a 3-0 series, you could it could be go down to the wire, and that's what you want, because Joe's got his hands on it, and he's a very difficult coach to get the better of.